You see, it's easy to identify with Mary and with Martha and with the town who have gathered to support one another, to grieve. Because you see, our souls groan in these moments. Most of us, if not all of us, have experienced these moments where we have lost a loved one, where someone who has touched our lives has gone on ahead of us, is the nicest way we can think to say it sometimes, and they are just not here. Our souls feel fractured. Questions come to mind. We go through the stages of grief, and sometimes it feels so lonely. And today in the church around the world, today in our church and in our hearts all throughout the year, and especially in moments like this when these things occur, the substance of our own faith in the face of death is on the table today. It's been on the table for you before, most likely. We have asked why. We have questioned God. We have questioned ourselves. We have questioned those who cared for them. We have questioned decisions that people have made. And we come to this moment, to this story of Lazarus, to this story about the love and grace of God, to this story of what resurrection really is and what it looks like. And if we're going to be honest, sometimes it's a hard pill to swallow. Verse 35 simply says, Jesus wept. Now, as I read these verses this week, and if you've read them, perhaps you've wondered, why did Jesus cry? Why would Jesus cry? I heard one fringe theory that we're going to keep on the fringe, but I'm going to share with you this morning, and it was that Jesus wept because he knew he was bringing Lazarus back to a life that, if we're honest, has its share of pain. It has its share of beauty and goodness and perfection and heaven on earth. But it has its moments and sometimes even its years of difficulty. There was a story I heard one time about a gentleman and his wife who went up to heaven, and they walked in through the pearly gates, and God met them at the door and began to show them around. Have you heard this story? There's probably 17 different versions. We're going to power through anyway. You're going to be okay. And they go into the pearly gates, and they're being shown around, and they're looking, and God says, this is our mess hall, this is our food hall, this is where you're going to come and eat. And they walk in, and it's just full of prime rib up to here and strawberry cheesecake. Those are my favorite things. I don't know what yours are, but that's what heaven's full of, right? Little Debbie cakes and all kinds of good stuff. So many nerds that you just don't even know that you can survive it. And the gentleman looks over at his wife and then looks back, and he says, and we can eat any of this. He said, you can eat any of this. You can eat all of it. You'll never be so full that it hurts. You'll never get sick. You'll never get heart disease. You can have whatever you want. You can eat whatever you want, and it's going to be a wonderful thing. And the man just looks at his wife and shakes his head, and they keep on going. And he looks up on the hill, and he says, what is that house? And God says, that's your house. And he takes him up there and shows him around, and it has everything he could have possibly wanted. It has a workshop with every woodworking tool imaginable. It has a garage out back with 786 Harleys, more than he could even dream of, right? One for every day of every 2 years. And so he's just looking around, and then he looks out the back door, and he sees this beautiful golf course, and he says, what's this? And he says, oh, that's the 18th green of Augusta. You can play anytime you want. He said, anytime I want? He said, yeah, you don't even have to check in with the clubhouse. You can just walk out there. I own the place. And he looks at his wife, and all of a sudden, he kicks the ground. He starts knocking stuff off the counters, and he runs around slamming doors. And she says, honey, what's wrong? And he turns, and he points at her, and he says, if it weren't for you and those bran muffins, we'd have been here years ago. We hurt, my friends. We grieve. We tell the beautiful and fun and good stories of life because it is salve to our soul. We should do that. When we get together, we remember and we name because they existed and they mattered and they had purpose, right? And we name them when other people shy away from it because they don't want to hurt your feelings or make you feel something that they don't want to make you feel. But we remember. And when we get ready to gather at Thanksgiving and at Christmas, we're going to tell the stories. And my joke about the bran muffins, simply reminding us that I don't know exactly what heaven holds. I have faith and belief, and we can squabble over a few of the details. I'm not too concerned if the road's made out of gold or the fence posts. There are some people I want to see. And if we're being honest, there's one dog in particular I really want to see. Because our love is already there. There's this bridge, there's this connection that we can't explain, but the string is not broken. We continue to love, and our love continues to grow, and they continue to love us, and their love for us continues to grow. It's a wild, unimaginable thing, but it's a thing that we claim in the church because we've seen it happen. We've seen love in action. It is a mystery, but God came down to be fully human and fully divine and to live among us and to love us. We tried with rules. He tried with a perfect little city you could live in, and that didn't work out. He tried with the whole country, and that didn't work out. He tried with the cloud and all of these things, and we kept messing all that up, and that didn't work. And eventually he said, I'm just going to come live with you. I'm going to walk with you. Not the ones of you who think you're too good for anybody else, the other ones. And I'm going to have dinner at your house, and we're going to get to know each other. And I am going to weep with the ones who love you. You see, another popular theory is that Jesus's humanity wept in the pain of loss. His friend had died. He's watching his other friends, their family members, grieve. He's watching an entire town that has showed up to support and love and care for. And the humanity of God Almighty in Jesus Christ, it's a mystery, I can't explain it, is moved to tears. Christ, who is the resurrection, not was. And Jesus is clear. If you catch the language in there, we translate the tense correctly. It's not I was the resurrection. It's not I will be the resurrection. It's I am. Am, present, now, here. You see, Mary says, or Martha, I can't remember which one now. We just read it, but I can't remember. Says, I know that resurrection will happen one day. And Jesus' response is, do you believe? And see, the tense there, Jesus doesn't say, do you, meaning all y'all. He says, do you. It's singular, you. Do you believe? And then he says, I am the resurrection. If we were in South Georgia, my family would say, I is the resurrection. Now, here, in this place, in this moment, even when death seems final, I am here. You see, Christ, who is the resurrection, freely enters the suffering of humanity. It's unbelievable. Now I'm going to put myself into the place of Jesus, and I am not better than, because I don't know if I would do that. I like to think I would. Of course, we all would. But Jesus comes down fully knowing what's going to happen. But does it anyway? There is no greater love than this, that one would lay down his life for his brother or his sister. Another way to see this is that Jesus' divinity, the God part of Jesus, wept in solidarity with those who were still left. And I believe that the human part of Jesus wept and that he felt that loss. Otherwise, there's no ability for Jesus to suffer. And I don't believe the God that we serve is like that. There are some who do. That God knew everything, that God can be unaffected by creation. God wouldn't change God's mind. God wouldn't feel something that happened on earth. But we do not believe that. And even more, we believe that in the midst of God being God, that God's heart hurt. Knowing that Lazarus would be with him was not what hurt. What hurt was watching his sister cry. What hurt was watching his friends weep. What hurt, or perhaps sometimes you've been moved by the courage that you see or the joy that you feel, and I don't know, I'm inferring here. This is not a God says, this is a Stephen thinks. But if I saw a town, and when I see people and towns rally around folks in the midst of their loss, I weep too. But it's not out of hurt. It's out of joy. Not because of the loss, but because of the love. Sometimes we gather because of the loss. But I think we then get to a place where we realize we are gathering because of the love. You see, we who must die demand a miracle. I've demanded a miracle. When they told me it was brain cancer, I couldn't have phrased it as a miracle. But I know what it looks like to go home and restructure the will and add beneficiaries to the investments to make sure that all the bills are on auto pay, to send an email to the whole family saying, these are my wishes if something were to go bad on the table. You have had moments like that too, or you've held the hand of loved ones who have walked those roads. And if you're not going to give us a miracle, then at least give us a reason. We demand a miracle, but in lieu of a miracle, at least give us a reason. And it's hard when sometimes there's not. And oftentimes there's more questions than there are answers in this life. You see, we know, as Paul Harvey would say it, the rest of the story, right? Lazarus lives. And that's a beautiful story for the people who get to experience that. But what does that mean for us when it didn't come true for us? We know Lazarus lives, but do we? Y'all ever heard that Tim McGraw song, Live Like You're Dying? I used to like that song until it came true. Then I decided I don't really like that song. You can still like it, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It's fine. There's a couple of his I don't like. It's got one about a truck for sale for like $6,000. It's really weird. I digress. But we who are still here live as if the eternal is now, because God is, not God was and not God will be. We believe those are true. But we live because God is. We live as though death has no power over our days. Now you can make an argument, but oh, but it does. We can make an argument. No, it does not, unless we give up that power. You can live as though you belong in life and in death to a God who loves you. You see, we can live and join the saints today. And I don't mean because of death. Because we can realize that nothing past, nothing present, nothing future can separate us from the all-encompassing love of God. A love that he gave to us to share with one another. We share it with God and then we share it with one another whether we realize it or not. And we feel that connection that transcends eternity. Because love does last forever. Resurrection. Yeah. One day. But another equally powerful miracle is resurrection now. New life now. In memory and in honor and building upon what the saints have given us. And with a God who loves us, who wept with us this past year, who, whether we realized it or not, sat with us and stood with us and held us, even like Mary and Martha, we were pretty angry about it and we didn't understand. Today, as we come for Holy Communion, we get to experience this gift of grace because Christ died for us. But that wasn't where it stopped. There was resurrection. We claim that truth for one day. But today, in this meal, in this tangible experience of God's grace and love for us, I ask that you claim resurrection now. Because I believe that it's true. And I believe that it is a miracle.